Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome.
Welcome
to Warriors Wrap-Up.
And Steph Curry takes another three. It's up and good! He's got 62!
On 95.7, the game.
Pass to Wiseman off the pick, and he flies in for a dunk.
Jam!
Oh, by Oubre! He caught it right at the restricted area and slammed it home with a left hand.
Here's John Dickinson and Ryan Covey.
Eric Paschal back on the floor for Golden State. Throws the ball into Mannion. Bounce pass to JTA. Turns and finds Poole. Poole off the screen. Backs up. Open for a three over Gabriel. Knocked it down. New career high for Jordan Poole. He's got 29.
Yeah, and Jordan Poole would go on to score 38, setting that new career high. Michael Mulder equaled his career high, tying seven threes, and he reached a new career high with 28 as well. Juan Toscano-Anderson flirted with a triple-double. Eric Paschal got to test things out, and the Warriors got a win after letting a big lead get away. They fell behind, but did enough to eke out a victory over the Pelicans, 125-122 at Chase Center. So the Dubs, Covey, have won five in a row, 24-11 now at home with the one game to go on Sunday, and 14-5 since April the 10th. All in all, for a glorified preseason game in May, I think it checked a lot of boxes. Avoided injury disaster on the Jordan Poole front. It was a, for the most part, watchable and I think well-played game by the Warriors, and a couple of career nights for a couple of guys that can put the ball in the basket.
Yeah, pooler than the other side of the pillow, JD, was Jordan tonight. And look, it was kind of classic Warriors, right? I mean, even though it was the reserves, it was kind of the same old story that we've seen lately. Warriors seemingly in control, everything going well, and then what, almost a 5-minute scoreless stretch down the stretch for this team. But ultimately, you know, Paschal got that big tip in, and then Poole got the layup, little bit of defense. Love that last sequence too, where they saved the ball from going out of bounds. Everybody gathering around Bazemore. Just really cool. And then how about the play where after that they hurry up to inbound because the Pels are just standing there? I mean, I know the game didn't really mean anything in the grand scheme of things, but it's that kind of attention to detail. Like, I don't know. That shows me that guys are paying attention. It shows me that they're committed to winning. It shows me that these guys that were getting meaningful minutes tonight and played a big role took this serious. So it was good to see. And just keeping this vibe going, too. I mean, 38-33, five games over 500. The worst this team's going to finish now is four games over 500. And if you handle your business against Memphis on Sunday, you're going to be six games over 500 and end the season winning all six of that final six-game homestand. It's got a nice ring to it, John Dickinson.
Yeah, and I just look at it from the context of the guys that played bigger roles tonight that we know are going to have to play big roles on Sunday played well. And yeah, you know, it's the two guys that had the career highs, and Jordan Poole looked very comfortable out there. I mean, this had, you know, you can see why in a game like tonight why Jordan Poole went down to the G League bubble and dominated, because tonight was basically it was kind of that kind of game, right? I mean, it was a lot of reserve players both ways, and he can level up and dominate that level of competition, and he really did tonight from a scoring standpoint. Also had six assists. And, you know, he's a guy you want to see stay in rhythm for a game on Sunday because the Warriors are going to need him. And, man, talk about averting disaster on that left ankle tweak. That looked bad. Like, that looked like, oh, boy, he might not be able to play on Sunday, you know, from the jump, because we're talking 40 hours from tip-off at the point in which that happens. But to see him be able to come back in the game, knock down a couple of threes, and then wind up, you know, going and setting a new career high, that's a very, very good sign. And then you know, Michael Mulder has been one of the eight in that rotation. The Warriors are going to need him to play a key role and knock down some shots on Sunday. So for him to go for 7 3-pointers, excellent there. He stays in rhythm. And then Juan Toscano-Anderson, we were talking about it in the pregame with the, I know all your wagers hit, and my wild card wager, it didn't hit because he didn't get the triple-double, but 9, 9, and 9. I think you can't bet flirt with a triple-double, but I think the first thing that popped in my head was flirt with a triple-double. That's exactly what he did. So the three that the Warriors are going to need with the rest of the big boys on Sunday all played well tonight. So that cannot you know, be looked at as anything other than a tremendous positive for tonight.
Big time. And, you know, how this applies to the rotation next year, we got all summer to diagnose that. Clearly, Jordan Poole's shown us he can score in the NBA. And if his three's fallen and he's in a good rhythm, he's a dangerous scorer. There's no doubt. And I did a little homework, JD. You'd be so proud of me because I know we always like to try and, you know, quantify how things stack up. What does it mean, this particular performance? Like Jordan Poole scoring 38 tonight. 58 guys in the NBA this year, 58 different guys scored at least 38 points in a game. You do the math, that's basically on average two guys per team. That's a pretty small number of NBA players that have done that this particular season. So, you know, just that alone tells you that Jordan Poole, from a scoring standpoint, he's special. Like, he can do a lot of things that a lot of dudes in the NBA simply can't. So that's a pretty cool little thing. I mean, there's just how many guys are going to play their whole career and never hit for 30? I mean, Jordan Poole dropping 38 tonight. So if there ever comes a day where they're going to need to rely on Poole to play more meaningful minutes, at least he showed from a scoring standpoint he can hold up. Now, the other stuff, you know, he's still a work in progress. I think we all know that. And there's times it can look a little rough, but the name of the game is, you know, to put the ball in the hoop. Like, that's kind of the purpose. So, I just like Poole's growth this year, and he's gotten a lot more confident. And then Mulder, too, like you said, like, he's going to be one of the eight for sure. And if he's knocking down his threes, he's a very valuable piece and can flip a game. Michael Mulder messes around, you know, and hits 7 threes in a playoff game. Warriors probably going to win that game, right? So it's just another thing to feel good about, and just this team just finding it at the right time. If you're the Suns, you're the Jazz, you're the Lakers in that play-in game, you ain't trying to see the Dubs right now. Dubs are rolling.
Yeah, and different circumstances than earlier in the season because, I mean, the Pelicans, rather, tonight, I mean, it was a very, very – it was a Cancun Pelicans kind of a night in the first quarter, really. I mean, but the Warriors came out and they buttoned up and they were ready to roll. But the Warriors also got a win without Stephen Curry for the second time in 9 games. And again, circumstances different, but – yeah, who cares? I mean, the Warriors had only had one the entire season. So to see, you know, Poole and Mulder, you know, be able to hold this team up along with JTA, even if a lot of the headliners were out for the Pelicans as well, I think, you know, you take that as a box check, the 38 wins, and you move to Sunday where the Grizzlies and the Warriors are going to face each other for the 8 seed. We'll run down between now and about 10:40 all of the scenarios that are still left to go through in the Western Conference, and we'll look ahead a little bit at the Warriors-Grizzlies matchup as well. For Sunday, as the Grizzlies did beat Sacramento in kind of a wild finish tonight in Memphis. The Grizzlies rested all of their regulars, still got a 1-point win themselves over the Kings. So both teams will enter play on Sunday at Chase Center at 38-33 with one game to go. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, and Odyssey Station. It's JD and Covey here. Warriors wrap up on a Friday night on 95.7 The Game as the Dubs get the win over the Pelicans, 125-122. Let's get to a caller here, 888-957-9570 to give us a call or shoot us a text. Mike in San Rafael is up first here tonight on Warriors wrap up. What's up, Mike?
Good evening, gentlemen. Just driving home from the game, and I would say I enjoyed the scrimmage very much. It was a very entertaining scrimmage.
It was.
And it was. And the thing that was good about it was the scoring confidence that, you know, Mulder and Poole got, because I think as we look forward, try to fast forward to the playoffs, which assuming we get past the play-in, you know that the teams are going to really focus on double-teaming Steph, and those guys are going to have to step up. So to actually get some success scoring tonight, somebody has to score. You can rebound, you can play tough defense, but if nobody scores, we don't win. And I think that that's what can make them very dangerous in the playoffs, is the success of these other players. Because I think if you figure out a four-game, you know, if they make it deep, they'll probably go seven games every time, because it's just they're just not good enough to really wipe anybody out, right? But if they win two games with everybody else stepping up, with Steph being double-teamed, and then Steph has two games where he just goes off and scores 40, 50 points, and I think, because I think that might get him pretty far in the playoffs, because I think they're a dangerous team. I don't think any team in the NBA can play good enough defense to, like, double-team and shut him down four games. It just, nobody's playing that great right now. If you look at the records. I mean, just look, we played the two best teams just Monday, Tuesday in the Western Conference. See what I mean?
Sure.
I mean,
it's a good point.
They can't consistently do that.
Yep. Thanks for the call. Good call. I think it depends on the matchup still. It depends on who's healthy and who's not. And I was actually, because I'm sick, I was watching the Utah-Oklahoma City game right after we got off the air for Warriors Live. And I was watching the Utah feed just to kind of catch up on what's going on. I like to hear what the team broadcasters say about their team. And the Utah broadcast was saying that they're going to be able to up it to about 13,000 fans for the first round of the playoffs inside Salt Lake City. And I thought, boy, that in a year where there hadn't been hardly anybody anywhere, and I know the Warriors wound up with their 41-55 again tonight, which is what they've had these last three or four games. And I thought, man, what an environment with 13,000. I think they can go all the way up to 75% capacity in the Delta, the old Delta Center, for that first round of the playoffs. So that's going to be a factor in this thing as well. But you know, I think Phoenix is gettable. I really do. I don't know about Utah, and I am a little reluctant to look too deep into the Utah thing, because Mitchell and Conley didn't play in that game on Monday.
Yeah, for sure. And that's obviously a huge game changer. And no, that's great knowledge, though, JD, on the seating capacity, because we already know that's a tough barn to play in anyway. And that'll only, you know, make it tougher for the opposition. So no easy feat. Look, eight seeds, seven seeds, they're not supposed to beat one seeds and two seeds. And that's why it doesn't happen very often. But I don't think this is your everyday eight seed. And quite frankly, because this year has been so topsy-turvy just in general, honestly, I mean, Utah is a very good team. I don't mean to besmirch their credentials. They are a really good team. But they're not your typical, like, you know, just bona fide, you know, championship contender, no doubt. Like, there's still a ton of questions around Utah. They haven't ever done anything. Donovan Mitchell's still young. He's ascending. So to me, it's still, this is about as wide open as a 1v8 could be. You know, kind of a la Dallas and the Dubs back in the day. I know we don't want to go that we believe route, but it just, I don't know. The Warriors are a very unique eight seed for all the reasons that we've seen. And again, I don't think Utah or Phoenix, for that matter, you know, can be rolling in there feeling like, oh, we're the team to beat because we're the one seed or the two seed. I mean, I know the Warriors aren't going to win the title this year, JD. We could all understand that. But I think realistically, there's about five teams in the West that feel like they have a legitimate chance to win the title, because there is no runaway favorite. They're just a team that ended up with a few more wins than the others.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Warriors wrap up. John Dickinson, Ryan Covey here. On a Friday night, Warriors get the win over the Pelicans as they improve to 38-33 with one game to go. Obviously, the Warriors still have to make it through Sunday to figure out where they're going to be and then get through the play-in tournament on some level, whatever their path winds up being, whether it's the Lakers or the Blazers. The one thing we did learn tonight, the Mavericks are officially out of that. They've clinched a spot tonight. They've avoided the play-in tournament, and actually the Lakers can no longer catch the Mavericks. They are immune. So it's down to Portland or the Lakers for 6-7, and Portland still controls the inside track there. They host Denver on Sunday, and if they win that game or if the Lakers lose one of their final two games, they play in Indiana and they play the Pelicans in their final two tomorrow and Sunday, then Portland would move up to the 6 and the Lakers would be locked into 7 for sure. So we'll see how that shakes out. We'll see if the Warriors wind up playing, you know, in that 7-8 game. We'll see if the Warriors can't win for some reason on Sunday. They'll have to, you know, go beat San Antonio and then have to catch somebody else on the back end to get into the tournament that way as the 8 seed. But regardless, these next 5, 6, 7 days are going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let me ask you this, JD. Portland or the Lakers? If the Warriors are able to pull it out on Sunday, and it's kind of funny. I know I've been really guilty of this, talking like it's a done deal. Not only are the Warriors winning Sunday, but they're winning the play-in tournament, and I already got them playing the Jazz in the first round. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. But if it is the Warriors in that 8 spot, who would you rather face on Wednesday, Portland or L.A.?
Oh, Portland, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt, Portland.
Okay.
I mean, the Lakers with Anthony Davis and LeBron James and their length at the wing positions and their ability to defend. I know they haven't had, you know, time together and they're not in sync, but I think that's still the most difficult matchup for the Warriors, without a doubt. I think Portland plays a pretty loose defensive game.
Right.
I think the Warriors are very comfortable playing in Portland. You'd go back to the one game that they played there right before the All-Star break in early March, and the Warriors played very well on that night and probably should have won the game.
Yep.
And Damian Lillard went off down the stretch, and the Warriors failed to execute, and that was one of the games that fell into that slip-away category. But no, we've seen Steph in particular and Draymond come up massive against Portland over the years in big games. I mean, the Warriors have flat out in playoff games dominated the Blazers. Now, they've been competitive, and I think at times maybe we think that the Blazers have beaten them more than they actually have because so many of the games have actually been good, but the Warriors have overwhelmingly, I mean, they've won all of them, I think, with the exception of one.
Yeah.
If you go back through the years, like one game, like it's 13-1 or something.
Yep.
Like that, the Warriors in those series, or maybe it's 12-1. I think, you know, the Warriors would be very comfortable. Portland is just, it's just a totally different animal to play Portland versus LeBron and Anthony Davis and that defense. I would want Portland unequivocally.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know, normally it would be a complete no-brainer. Obviously, the injuries to LeBron right now and AD, and look, they still got a little bit of time here. I mean, that game isn't for 5 days. But I do think the Lakers are going to end up in that 7 seed. But what's interesting, though, is if you think about it, and correct me if I'm wrong, JD, the Portland-Denver game still matters for the Nuggets, because couldn't they catch the Clippers still and move up in the standings?
Yeah, no, it does. In fact, those two flip-flop tonight. The Clippers had a weird deal tonight. They were playing in Houston, and they basically decided, you know, kind of like, we're pulling our guys mid-game and kind of tanked mid-game and just, you know, went rest over trying to win. And the Rockets beat them tonight in Houston for their 17th win. And so the Nuggets, with their win, they won in Detroit. So the Nuggets actually moved ahead of the Clippers. They're tied at 47-24. The Nuggets have the season series win and the tiebreaker. So the Nuggets now control 3. If they win in Portland, right,
they got to hold them off now, basically. Yeah,
exactly. They or the Clippers could lose. But the Clippers are playing at Oklahoma City on Sunday. So in all likelihood, now they did just lose to Houston, the Clippers, and they did some weird stuff. It was almost as if the Clippers were saying, we want Dallas, because Dallas had moved up to 5th, and that's still not a lock, but it was or maybe the Clippers wanted to avoid any scenario where they could play the Lakers in the first round, if maybe the Lakers moved up to 6, because if the Clippers dropped to 4, there's no way that obviously they would play the Lakers. If the Lakers are six, they wouldn't play them. If the Lakers are seven, obviously they wouldn't play them. But if the Clippers are three and they controlled three, all the Clippers needed to get to three was a win over Houston tonight and a win over Oklahoma City on Sunday. That's all. And think about that. The two worst teams in the conference, and the Clippers kind of punted and went rest mid-game over, you know, trying to lock that down. And the only real explanation is they wanted to assure themselves that they avoided the Lakers.
That's so bizarre, too, for a bunch of different reasons. I mean, first of all, you know, with what happened to them in the playoffs last year and, you know, the fact that, I mean, that team was assembled to be, quote, some super team on the rise. I mean, you know, last year they get bumped. What was that, in the second round? This year you're the fourth seed? Like, I don't know. To me, the Kawhi to the Clippers thing, and again, we'll see how it goes in the playoffs, but I don't think they're in a position where they can be discerning about who they play. For me, it would be about finishing the regular season, on as high a note as possible, handling your business and saying it's up to other teams to beat us, not the other way around. But I don't know. I just the way that they handle stuff down there in L.A., it's just bizarre, quite frankly. And it's just hard for me to believe. It's kind of like Brooklyn over in the East where, you know, you haven't done anything. Yeah, on paper, you look like you should be a juggernaut, and you haven't actually won anything yet, but boy, we're just counting that it's all going to come together at the right time. Oh, okay. I mean, honestly, 24 losses for the Clippers this regular season, that seems pretty disappointing. I mean, 21-14 on the road, that team's way too talented to be in this position right now where they're the freaking fourth seed.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, if I'm them, I'd just be three and take my chances that it's not going to be the Lakers. And to me, if you're three, you take your chances, you avoid LA, you hope for that, but then you wind up, you know, maybe you play Portland, who I think, you know, you'd be favored, and you'd be on the Phoenix side of the bracket. Although, again, maybe they're thinking second round as well. If the Lakers are seven and the Clippers are three, then they'd play the Lakers in the second round. So maybe
didn't they
maybe
sweep
they're
the Lakers,
thinking
though?
About maybe
they
they're
swept
thinking
the Lakers
about
this year, right?
You know what? I actually don't recall. Maybe they did.
I think they did. Look. I think they swept the Lakers this year. And I know, you know, because they beat them in the opening night, and then I know they maybe played them without LeBron and AD. But
yeah,
I don't know, just
exactly.
Yeah, just to be angling though, you know, to be comfortable moving down to angle to avoid a team. That's to me, that's scared money. Like if that was their rationale, that's scared money. Or if it's just, hey, we felt like we could rest our guys and still beat the Rockets. Well, obviously that blew up in your face too. So whatever their rationale is, I don't like it. Bottom line, I just right now this is the time of year where you need to be winning, hitting your groove, and that's not a big boy move. That's a scared money move, and I don't know, something like that. It rarely works out. Ask the Dallas Mavericks, you know, back in the We Believe year.
Well, it's the Clippers. I mean, it's not exactly surprising. I mean, they got some, you know, even. The way they kind of operate, you know, my take on Paul George and, you know, Ty Lue. Is, you know, kind of weird on that, on the players coach front, and even yep. Kawhi, like for as great as Kawhi is, there is some low key, like doesn't always want to bring it to Kawhi Leonard. There just flat out is, like he picks and chooses when it's time to lock in and when things matter to him. So I think there's an element of that. And look, when he's locked in, he's as good as anybody, and he's healthy. He's as good as anybody, but there's a little of the selective when do I feel like it's time to go mode for Kawhi that kind of rubs me the wrong way. And I think because he's quiet, he gets away with it. Like, whereas guys that are more brash about it don't get away with it. And I think, you know, Kawhi almost uses the quiet, I'm a robot, you know, kind of thing to his advantage in that, when, you know, low key, he's kind of a diva, to be perfectly honest, and wants to pick and choose when it's time to play hard.
Go ahead, brother.
Go ahead, man. I'll let you finish on that. We'll get to a couple calls.
No, I think you're absolutely right as far as him being a diva. I mean, everything we heard out of L.A. last year was, you know, Kawhi was playing by a different set of rules. I mean, the way he flexed bringing Paul George to L.A. So, bottom line, you mark my words. Clippers, they're not getting to the title. They're not getting to the championship this year, and I don't even think they'll make it to the conference finals.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. It's John Dickinson and Ryan Covey here on 95.7 The Game. Let's get to Antonio in Oakland. Hey, Antonio.
Oh, hey, what's up, JD? Hey, JD, earlier I told you, Jordan Poole's going to get 40 points, and he actually got 38, but I was a little off. But yeah, hey, I'm so happy. I just love seeing wins, you know. Jordan Poole with his splashing. I start calling him Jordan Swimming Pool. You know, I mean, if he keeps it up, you know, he's looking like a decent pick at number 28. So we'll see how that goes. But like I said, whoever we play in the playing Lakers or Portland, sure, you know, you don't want to face, you know, Lakers with their super team with Anthony Davis and LeBron and stuff, Schrader. You know, Portland, they have about four guys who can create their own shot. I don't know if you want to face that either. You know, the Warriors have had success against them, but I mean, I kind of want the Lakers just so the from a NorCal SoCal rivalry standpoint. But you know, what's better from a team standpoint is obviously Portland. So whoever we get, I'm rocking with the Warriors. I think we're gonna win every game. You guys know how I speak on these airwaves. You know that I'm optimistic as ever. Capital O for Oakland. Tell me, optimistic.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Antonio. Appreciate the call. Let's get to Priest in Palo Alto, and then we can tie off this Clippers conversation, too, because I've got a few more details on that. What's up, Priest?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, fellas.
And
I'm so excited about these young guys, these young guns, seeing these young fellas do their thing. Getting them some, if they get through the play-in and get to the playoffs, I think it's going to bode well for them. I just, you know, my fear is, I've been a long game type dude waiting until next year to see when the Splash Brothers is back together. But I'm excited about Poole, this kid Mulder, and they're young players, man. That's all I've been watching all year long. My focus has been on them and what we may have available for next year to help the Splash Brothers get back on the road to greatness. And so Poole is legit to me. There's no doubt in my mind about him. And I like Mulder. JTA looks good. Looney goes without saying. We'll see about Pascal. You know what I mean? But everybody's been talking about how these kids can't be a bench for next year. And I beg to differ. This ain't the G League they doing this too. This is the National Basketball Association. These kids, a couple of them is legit. I'm excited.
Thanks, Priest. Appreciate the call. I think jury's still out on all of that as far as next year goes, but this is the team right now, and these guys are helping this group right now. I think you're still, if you just say you're going to pencil, I know we got into this last night on The Final Word, if you're just going to pencil these guys in for next year and say you're done, I mean, we've seen how hard Steph Curry's had to work, you know, and what he's had to do with this group. Like, I can't get there. Like, there isn't anything that I'm going to see from these guys. You know, Jordan Poole, 38 tonight. I mean, tonight was basically a G League game. That's awesome.
It was.
Like, he could score, but we've seen him do that in the G League before, and he did it, you know, essentially tonight. Like, so tonight doesn't tell me that he's a rotation piece for next year. He goes and balls out in the play-ins and in the playoffs. If the Warriors get in a series, you know, then and comes back to camp next year and he's a little bit better and he earns that. He's going to have to re-earn that spot, you know, at the beginning of next year. But to me, you can't just rest on your laurels and rest on what you have. We'll see about Mulder. Again, it's working now, but he's not somebody I'd pencil in. The one guy that I do think you can kind of pencil in, and we've talked about this, is JTA. And again, I'm not saying he's going to have as big a role next year as he's at now, but I think he's somebody that could have more of a consistent role from the jump just based on his specific skill set. But fans are excited. I get it. Fans are fired up. Fans want to, you know, okay, pencil them all in, bring them all back. We've seen, though, what it looks like over the long haul with this group.
Yeah, you still need at least, like, and either a Kelly Oubre or a Kelly Oubre comp replacement, and then I think another, you know, front court score and probably even one more scoring wing. And then you plug in the rest of these guys. I agree. I mean, we're on the same page, JD. It's just I think it's these guys have shown that they can be contributors and they can do the job. Now, to what degree, of a championship caliber team, what role would they play? In an ideal world, you know, Jordan Poole would be your eighth guy, you know, something like that, where you've got a bunch of guys that you would fancy ahead of him because you're just that good. That's where you hope to get. But in the meantime, it sure is better than Jordan Poole not looking like he belongs and Michael Mulder not looking like he could do the job. What this bench group, and we're talking about those three in particular, what they've shown the last couple of weeks is they can step in and fill a role if need be.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, and that's a good sign. Let's get Michael in here. Michael in Oakland is up next. What's up, Michael?
Hey, how's it going, man? Thanks for taking my call. Love the show. I just wanted to just pose two objections or pushbacks to the JD theory. One, I think that the Lakers are the team to beat no matter what number they sit. Like, that's the team you want to avoid. So I understand the Clippers. Apart from that, I think the Dubs could beat and can even beat the Lakers, but that's the one thing that I definitely push back and say. I think that the Dubs have a really good chance as anybody else, and they still have a chance the Lakers, but that's just a juggernaut. If those guys are healthy, they got to be the team to beat in the West.
Yeah, well, I actually agree with that, Michael. That's why I don't think the Warriors. That's why I don't think you want the Warriors to play them in the play-in tournament, because you'd be knocked to the second game right off the top. And I've said this a couple of times this week. If the Lakers play Phoenix, if the Lakers are 7 and Phoenix is 2 and they play in a series, the Lakers are winning that series. Like, it's just like and it's going to suck for the Suns, who have had a really nice year, their best year in a decade plus, and they're going to go home in the first round, and it's basically going to all go for naught. Like, that's what I think of the Lakers if they're healthy. As far as the rest of it, I mean, we'll see. I think, you know, to me, if you're the Warriors, you want to somehow get Phoenix. I think Utah's going to be – I think Utah is better than they're getting credit for. And that's not to say the Warriors can't compete against them. Hell, they won 2 out of 3 against them. They played a great – I think the March game was even more impressive than the game this week, that when the Warriors beat them, because they had their guys in that game. So, but that being said, I think that's going to be a tough task. I wanted to tie off this Clippers thing. So right out of the jump today – the Clippers didn't play Paul George or Kawhi tonight in Houston at the start. They didn't play Patrick Beverley at the start, all sitting out going into it. And then as the game went on, and Ty Lue was quoted after the game saying, "We've got a lot of decisions to make. The most important thing is health." So they rested those guys. And then as the game was going on, they were pulling. Like, it was basically like a baseball game where you play the guys you have for about 5 innings, and then that's it. So as the game went on, they just went deeper and deeper in their bench, and the Rockets wound up beating them.
Yeah, it's just – it's crazy to me. Like, and, you know, the Clippers – first of all, everybody had the layoff before the bubble, right? Missed some time. And I know the Clippers played in the bubble, but they were bounced by the second round. So it's not like, you know, they played as deep into the summer as the Lakers did, you know, the other teams that were, you know, playing deeper in the conference finals and obviously into the NBA finals. This and then, like, you know, Paul George. Like, this idea that Paul George isn't 36 years old. It's not like Paul George has got all these playoff miles on his odometer. Even Kawhi, for that matter. Kawhi's missed a lot of time, you know, throughout his career. And I mean, you look up, like, it's a 72-game season. Kawhi's played 52 games. Paul George has played 54. Morris has played 42. I mean, Zubac has been their most consistent player. He's played 70 of their games. I mean, these guys, they all miss a ton of time. So it's like last year, what was clear by the time they got to the playoffs was, well, they never quite got it together in time to gel. And I would argue that they still haven't checked that box this year. And then, you know, with some of the turnover on the team this year, trading away Lou and you know, Beverly missed time. Like, it just still hasn't clicked for me with the Clippers. And until they can put together a sustained run, and they get by because they're a talented group, there's no doubt. And, you know, when these guys do play, we've seen them. I mean, they can be really dangerous, but they're just not consistent enough. And I don't think you just roll into the playoffs and all of a sudden flip that switch. Now, the Lakers, that's a different deal because that's LeBron, and LeBron has proven as long as he's up for it and it matters to him, you're in trouble if you're in a playoff series. So that he's got the you know, the sponsor's exemption for me, basically for life. But other than that, I mean, the Clippers, they just don't have it like that. So, like I said, you mark my words. Second round, they're out. They're not even going to the conference finals.
888-957-9570. He's Ryan Covey. I'm John Dickinson. We'll come back. We'll hear from Steve Kerr on what the plan is going to be for the Warriors between now and Sunday afternoon. We'll also hear from Steve Kerr on Jordan Poole and from Jordan Poole himself. And then we'll run down the scenarios still in play in the Western Conference. That's all coming up here. It's Warriors wrap-up. Dubs beat the Pelicans 125-122. And you heard it right here on 95.7 The Game.
Warriors will throw it in. Mannion the catch on the logo. Bounce pass to the cutting pool. He'll drive right to the rack. Goes early and scores with 21.4 to go. Stan Van Gundy's going to call a timeout. Warriors back on top, 123-122.
Now, back to Warriors wrap-up with John Dickinson and Ryan Covey on 95.7 The Game.
There was no other way it was going to end, right? Like, you knew that the Warriors in that spot were going to design something for Jordan Poole to get the shot. And Jordan Poole going to the basket, which, you know, continues to be, I think, an underrated part of his game. And he winds up finishing, hit a couple of free throws late. That gave him 36. He winds up with 38, a new career high, and the game winner. Warriors needed a stop to salt it away. But it felt like everybody in the gym knew it was going to Jordan Poole, and Jordan Poole was still able to get the job done. That's impressive stuff for him tonight.
Yeah, and you texted me right before that possession. You said Jordan Poole about to hit a game winner, and he did, taking it to the basket. And when the Warriors had that stretch of, you know, scoreless play, about 4.5 minutes, it was all on the perimeter. They couldn't get anything going to the basket. And what do you know? Pascal gets the tip in, and then Jordan Poole goes to the basket after that. Too many times, you know, when we see the Warriors, things get a little dicey, they don't do that. They don't take the ball to the cup, or, you know, they don't get some, you know, some action, some split action, and work something towards the basket. You know, in a playoff series, you want to, you know, if things get a little dicey, something a little closer to the basket, maybe a good idea. You know, I think that was a positive sign. And yeah, I mean, we saw it potentially slipping away again, but they did just enough down the stretch. So it was a very Warriors-esque win, even though the Pelicans messed around and tried to take it away after looking pretty uninspired for most of the night, shall we say.
Yeah, the Cancun Pelicans tonight, I think, especially in the first quarter where the Warriors went for 41-32 dubs at the end of the first, 75 in the first half. But, yeah, that 19-point lead went away. But the Warriors, as they were able to do in the game against Utah, they were able to gather themselves in the final minute or two and come up with a victory. Let's hear from Steve Kerr following this ball game tonight in the post-game Zoom room, and he discussed Jordan Poole's game and Jordan Poole's development.
Well, he was aggressive from the start and had a big first quarter. The game came really easily to us in that first quarter. The ball was moving. We had a ton of assists, and I thought New Orleans came back much stronger in the second half, picked up their defense. And so it's great to have Jordan out there because he can make plays against, you know, good defense, tight defense. He can get to the rim, and like he did on that last play. But he's a shot creator for us. He's doing a great job. It's really fun to see how far Jordan has come, you know, in his 2 years in the league.
You can say it, Steve. You can say Cancun Pelicans. I know you wanted to. You kind of did. He gave such a politically correct answer there. Like, boy, the Pelicans, it was just much different in the second half. Steve Kerr basically said, yeah, they decided to actually try in the second half, so they got back into the game.
Yeah, I actually kind of like Alexander Walker. He's a decent player for sure. But, yeah, no, same thing with Steve Kerr. He's always going to say the politically correct thing. And I think, you know, Jordan Poole, you hit on it, though, JD. Jordan Poole's ability to create his own shot and get to the basket. He's just got a quick first step. You know, he's got a good feel for the defense. And you could just tell, like, he looks like a guy that's been soaking up game from 30 at every turn. You could even see, you know, before that last possession, Steph was talking to him. You know, it'd be like, I don't know, being around Pablo Picasso every day in an art studio or something. Like, you maybe want to pay attention to the technique, right? And not just the finished product, not just marveling at the greatness and all the things that he can do, but the process, the artistic process. And Jordan Poole gets a front row seat to that every day. And you can say, well, any player that's been ever played with Steph, but it's different because Poole is, you know, they're a very similar size. I mean, they're basically the same height, you know, play the same position by and large. And for Jordan Poole, like, Steph's been able to obviously carve out a Hall of Fame career. Like, Jordan Poole's not going to go to the Hall of Fame. We all know that. But what Jordan Poole can do is be in the NBA for the next decade if he rounds out some of the other aspects of his game. And clearly he strikes me as the kind of guy that's aware of the fact he's in a really unique situation getting to learn under the tutelage of Steph Curry. And the beautiful part about Steph is he's such a willing teacher too, right? I mean, he's got such a level of humility for a player of his status. And I think Steph also knows, like, it behooves Steph to take Jordan Poole under his wing the same way it behooves Draymond to take Wiseman and JTA under his wing, because next year you're going to probably need these guys if you want to get back into the championship conversation. So it's one hand washing the other, but Jordan Poole to me looks like a dude that's been spending some time watching Steph Curry apply his trade.
Let's hear another one from Steve Kerr on the scare as early in the second half, Poole goes down. He tweaks that ankle. It didn't look good. He was able to come back and obviously finish the game, but here's what Steve Kerr had to say about Poole's ankle injury.
You always are terrified when somebody goes down with a rolled ankle because you just don't know how bad it is. But fortunately, it wasn't too bad. And I was really surprised when he came back in the game. But Drew Yoder told me he was fine and good to go.
So there you go. And yeah, I think everybody was surprised. I thought he was done for the night. And Sunday was immediately going to be in question. But not only did he come back, he came back and he played well.
Yeah, I was actually in the restroom and I got a couple of texts from a couple of my buddies and it was that doesn't look good, and I was like, oh man, what happened? Run out, hit the rewind. I was like, ooh, but then by the time I fast forwarded back to real time, he was already getting ready to go back out there. So I was like, okay, crisis averted. Ah, to be young, John Dickinson, and to be able to bounce back from things like that. If that happened to me, like, get in the mail or something, I don't know, I'd be down for the count for like a month. But Jordan Poole came right back.
Yeah, he got it, went to the locker room, came back, got it stretched out, wanted to get back in the game, and that obviously calms everything down as far as these next basically 38 hours until tip-off of the game on Sunday afternoon against the Grizzlies. One more from Steve Kerr, and then we'll hear from Jordan Poole here. What's next for the Warriors? Steve Kerr laid out what tomorrow is going to look like as they head towards Sunday.
We're going to have a shoot around tomorrow at 11 o'clock. So we'll go through our game plan for Memphis. It'll be brief. Guys will get shots up and, we'll talk about the game. And then we have to come in and test tomorrow night at 10:30 because of the 12:30 start. It's we'll try to keep it short and sweet tomorrow and be ready to go on Sunday.
So kind of the normal routine, under non-pandemic circumstances, you play a night game, you'd come in the next morning, and typically you'd maybe have a practice, but with everything going on and obviously wanting to make sure this team's rested, you come in, you have a shoot-around. You don't get to have a shoot-around because of the early start for Sunday. So you come in, you have a shoot-around, you go over the game plan, you go over everything, you get the blood flowing, and then you call it an afternoon. But, yeah, these afternoon games, and we learned that going back in March where Draymond laid it out, like, yeah, three times a day, got to test, got to get that one in at 11 o'clock, or I got to come in at 5 in the morning to get that test. It's a different day, but the Pelicans obviously will be flying. The Grizzlies. It's so funny. I get the Pelicans and Grizzlies mixed up from time
Me
to
too.
Time. They seem very, very similar. Grizzlies are going to fly tomorrow, obviously out here to the West Coast for the early game. But yeah, so just that's kind of the layout. Not a full blown practice or anything, but go through the game plan and then get everybody up to speed and make sure everybody gets their. It passes their COVID tests. I mean, the health and safety protocols, we haven't talked a lot about it from a day-to-day standpoint. Every once in a while, things pop up. Boy, you'd sure hate to have something pop up in a game of that magnitude, obviously, on Sunday.
Yeah, everybody's got to be buttoned up. I mean, in essence, the playoffs begin on Sunday. I mean, there's just no other way around it. Like, that is a massively important game. And, I know we were talking about this a little bit on the pregame, JD, but look, for Draymond, for Steph, these guys that thirst for that level of competition, you've been waiting for this all year. And, I know Draymond went on record, the play-in tournament doesn't motivate me. I think he was, maybe being a little, ironic, sarcastic, whatever you want to call it, but the reality is Draymond Green lives to play meaningful basketball, and this certainly falls under that category. Is it, playing in the NBA Finals against the Cavs? No, but you can't get to the NBA Finals unless you qualify for the playoffs. Can't get to the playoffs right now if you're the Warriors unless you get through the play-in tournament. And your best chance in the play-in tournament is to take care of the Memphis Grizzlies on Sunday. So playoffs begin Sunday, period, point blank. And I know these guys will be up for it. And, yeah, it is, you know, it's interesting when you lay it out like that, like all the number of tests and just everything these guys have to go through. You know, it's unfortunate, you know, just simply because we're all facing it. But, you know, especially now with vaccinations and – but even that with Damian Lee's situation, like – even when you are vaccinated, it's obviously not a 100% guarantee. So I understand playing this thing safe for everybody is the way to do it. And if that's what it takes for these guys to be able to go out and play basketball and entertain us and go make their money, so be it.
Let's hear a little bit from Jordan Poole tonight as he goes for the career high 38. Let's start at the end, basically, of this one. JP asked how it felt that Steve Kerr drew up that final play for him.
Man, that's stuff that you dream about as a kid, you know, hitting a game winner, making a game winning shot. And it feels good to have fans back, you know, to feel the energy. And, you know, like I said, this is just stuff that you dream about as a kid. And when you're in the gym shooting by yourself, you're counting down, clock's counting down, you're down by one, whether it's a free throw, a pull up, or, you know, a layup, whatever it is. And, you know, it's just it's good for the heart, good for the soul, you know, and it's a pretty fulfilling moment. Can't dwell on it too long, but definitely cherish this a little bit and get back to work tomorrow.
And the one thing about Jordan Poole is, I mean, he doesn't shy away from taking a big shot. And I think that was on display during, you know, his time at Michigan. He hit some big shots for them in yeah. college. And, you know, you can't make the big shot if you're afraid to take it. And he's not afraid to take it.
No, and you know what? I'm just going to go on record, man. I like Jordan Poole. I was high on him coming into the season. He was my adopted dub of the year, the guy that I was really going to look to take a big step and felt like it was coming. Got off to a bit of a rough start, and then ultimately, you know, wasn't in the rotation, went down to the G League, took his medicine. You know, and I'm sure that was on some level humbling for him because he is a guy that you know, certainly all guys, you know, play better when they're confident. I get that. But Poole seems like that's even more to the extreme for him. But he's certainly a guy that believes in himself. He's gotten better. Clearly, he's put in the work. And I think, too, JD, it's pretty clear that he's earned the respect and the trust of Kerr and his teammates around him. And, you know, sometimes that can be a little hit or miss with rookies, especially on a veteran team like this. A lot of guys in that locker room got a lot of clout. And so Poole's, you know, earned his keep. And, sky's the limit for him, man. I do think he's shown us that he can be an NBA player, an NBA rotational player for many years to come. It's just going to be to what level and, you know, what's that team going to look like with whatever role that he fills. So I'm happy for Jordan Poole, and I got to say, I like his attitude, man. I'm rooting for Jordan Poole.
Yeah, and it's pretty clear that, and this has been true from the jump, I mean, his teammates have spoken to how hard he works. And, you know, that's something, again, we talk a lot about, you know, perception versus reality. And I think at times, you know, Jordan Poole can kind of come off, and it's unfair as a guy that, you know, maybe he comes off like, yeah, he's cool, he's confident, a little bit of swag. And I think at times that can get miscast for doesn't want to work hard. And that, you know, that couldn't be further from the truth when you talk to coaches and other players that are around him all the time. So I think it does need to be, you know, pointed out from time to time. You know, the fact, like, look, yeah. You know, we talk about it for Wiggins, and I think it's, you know, it's the opposite thing, right? Like, Wiggins comes off as kind of quiet, and it's like, well, he isn't the alpha, and he you know, he doesn't want to be that guy. Poole, it's the opposite, right? Like, it's all of the things that come with being, you know, kind of the alpha and being unafraid. It's like, well, that means you're, you know, too cool to work hard. Not true.
Yeah, and everything we heard coming out of the pandemic was Jordan Poole was in the lab getting stronger, working on his shot. That was all the chatter, you know, coming out of camp, and, you know, from everything we were hearing about this team. And again, it took a little while for it to come to fruition, but it's certainly coming to light at a pretty opportune time of the season. And, you know, here's the other thing, too. Like, when you think of a young player, JD, like, clearly had the struggles early, was totally miscast last year, was not ready for prime time. We knew it. It was a desperate situation for this team. Maybe hurt his development. Goes down to the G League, takes his medicine, understands he's got to take his game to another level, keeps working, keeps grinding, comes into this season. Again, you know, the outlook is good, you know, all the reports are positive, but then, you know, it doesn't find his way into the rotation early in the year, goes to the G League, carries that back, has a really nice stretch, you know, a couple of months ago. But then let's face it, like, he had fallen off again. I mean, we talked about it on a lot of these shows. How many games, you know, under 50% from the field and just still looking like he's trying to find his way? Well, he's found it the last couple of, you know, about the last 2 weeks. He seemingly certainly got his confidence back, and I think you nailed it earlier. Playing more has just allowed him the ability to understand, hey, I can have an off night here, have a couple of, you know, a bad stretch there, and it's not going to cost me my spot because right now they don't really have a choice. So he can ride that wave. And now it's almost like he's come out on the other side and has found that confidence again. And I'd much rather he's finding his confidence right about now, you know, as opposed to where he was at a couple of weeks ago, because I think we all can agree the Warriors are about to play some pretty important basketball games here in the next week.
Yeah, and you know me, I'm reluctant to get too far into next year as it pertains to what guys are doing right now, but I do think it's worth playing this cut from Jordan Poole, as he was asked about what he thinks his role will be next season.
You know, just be ready to step up for wherever I'm needed. Obviously, the plan is to be at full health next year, bringing Clay back to an already talented team. And, you know, if that is something that makes us more powerful, stronger, better team, I'm all for it, when, you know, whatever the team needs. You know, whether it's coming off the bench or whatever the situation is, I'll make sure to be ready.
Yeah, so there you yes, go. Sir. Right perspective. And, again, look, if he can be a backup, basically the Curry backup, you know, I still think they're going to have to add a legitimate backup point guard, even if it's somebody that doesn't necessarily play all the time. Like, I just think you have to have that. Like, you can't, like, Poole could play the position, but you can't, like, you have to have somebody that can actually be, like, if Steph goes down and you have to start Jordan Poole, even if that's the way you go, if Steph went down, you still would need a backup point guard. Like, you wouldn't, like, and that's not Nico Mayne. So you're going to have a backup point guard regardless. But I think, you know, if Poole can plug himself into kind of the role that he has now, or a you know, an extended version of that role, if he's good enough to do that, that would go a long way. And it would maybe mean that the Warriors don't, they're going to have to get a backup point guard, but maybe the backup point guard that they get could be a peg down on the, you know, maybe they don't have to spend as much for that guy, if that
sure
makes sense.
Yeah, and maybe, look, I hear you. I agree, Nico Mannion not quite ready yet, but we're talking about, at this point, kind of the backup to the backup, and I don't know, you know, a good offseason program for Nico Mannion, and maybe he could be ready to fill that role. I know when the Warriors drafted him, they're hoping that he can fill that role, so, you know, he's going to get first crack at it. No, I hear you. I know. But he's got handle, and I think he sees the floor pretty well. Is he ready to be playing, you know, 25 minutes with any regularity if Steph got hurt? Oh, God, no. That would be a disastrous scenario. But it's also not unrealistic to think that a player could get better from year one to year two, and certainly that's what they're hoping for Mannion. At least he's gotten run this year. And look, it hasn't – has Nico Mannion shown that he's ready for, you know, to be a starting point guard in the NBA? No chance. But what he has shown is he's got some talent, he's got some ability, and I don't think I'm watching Nico Mannion say, oh, that guy can't play in the league. We still don't know, but he also hasn't shown me that he can't play in the league.
Yeah, at this point, yeah, he hasn't shown you that he can, but he hasn't, yeah, maybe shown you he can. They gotta get a backup point guard.
You're out on Nico Mannion, huh?
Well, I'm not out on him, but you can't plan on him. There's nothing, like, I do disagree with your opinion on, well, if he gets in the gets an offseason pro, like, he can't be a backup point guard next year. Like, no, he can't be a backup. That doesn't mean he can't have a career at some point. I think he can have a career at some point, but he can't be the backup point guard next year. Like, you need to go get a veteran, you know, backup point guard. Even if Jordan Poole's going to play the minutes, you still need somebody in between, you know, at that point, like, somebody that actually is a backup point guard. Ish Smith or Ricky Rubio or, yeah, you know, whoever it is, you need somebody that actually can be a backup point guard. So, it gets categorized. Like, I don't like it when it, and I'm not coming down your road on this, but I don't like it when it gets categorized. Like, some people would say, well, JD, you're not in on Jordan Poole. And it's like, well, No, I think Jordan Poole can have a nice career, but when we're talking about, you know, is what he's done to this point, does that mean that he's got a role next year? And I'm like, no, I don't. I really don't think it does. Now, does that mean he can't or he won't for sure? Not necessarily. I'm just saying, like, I'm not to the point where I go, you know, Jordan Poole's playing 25 minutes next year and he's in the rotation and he's Steph's backup and that's just the way it is. It's like, well, maybe, you know, and I think he's at the point where if he continues to get better, he's got a shot at maybe doing that. Nico Mannion is like a step away from being a step away.
Okay, and I will agree with you on that. Here's what I'm saying, though. If you go into next year and let's just talk about pieces in that backcourt, dudes with guard next to their name. You go Steph, Clay, Poole, Kelly Oubre, or a Kelly Oubre-level replacement, Damian Lee, and then Nico Mannion. You think Damian Lee and or Mannion and then bring in a veteran?
One of those guys has got to be a backup point guard. Yeah, you're going to have to – like, okay. One of those is
like
going to have
to be a backup. Like a traditional ball handling. Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah, or – yeah, it could be – you know, it could be a guy that looks to score too, although I think you're less inclined to need a guy that looks to score because if you're high on Poole. Like,
that's
if you're high on Poole – But you still need somebody that can come in and play point guard minutes. Like, you still need somebody that can come in and run a team. Like, whether that guy could score, you know, whether that guy's a scorer or not. Like, I don't want to use the I hate this player, so I don't want it to I don't want you to think that I like but even if the backup point guard is Isaiah Thomas, like even if it I would not want Isaiah Thomas, but even if it's a shoot first guy.
Right.
Like that's okay, but you'd be less apt to want a shoot first guy because you like Poole. Like, I'd rather have Poole than Isaiah Thomas, if that makes sense. Like, but that does so that means that the point guard has to be more of the Ricky Rubio type or the Ish Smith type, like somebody that can just come in and run a team.
Exactly. Yeah, traditional passing point guard, because Poole would be your scoring point guard, if you will. I mean, that's kind of what his role is. I mean, he's a combo guard.
Yeah, and I think you're probably going to want some flexibility to play Poole, you know, at the two also in certain situations. So you know, if you're going to play him at the two, then that means you would need somebody to play at the one. I mean, Steve Kerr kind of telegraphed that. Like, I think they're making it work with what they have, but I think in a perfect world, they'd like to have somebody that's more of a facilitator playing with Jordan Poole there. So, no, I don't think Nico Mannion is that guy. But, again, that doesn't mean I think he stinks or can't have a career. He's 20 years old, for crying out loud. I just don't think he has a role on next year's team. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, especially if you're trying to win a championship. And I will agree with that, absolutely. I mean, we are in 100% agreement. Like, if the Dubs are going to be in the championship conversation next year, they need firepower, veteran firepower on that bench that they currently don't have, I think, regardless of how we get there.
They need a start, and this is with Clay. They need a starting caliber wing that comes off the bench. They need a backup point guard. And that can complement Jordan Poole or play independently of Jordan Poole, and they need a veteran big. Like, those three things they need, like, bottom line. And it gives you insurance with Looney. It gives you insurance with Wiseman. It maybe gives you insurance with Poole. If it's not Oubre, it's maybe somebody that's a better fit than Oubre, which gives you insurance on Wiggins. And if something happens with Clay and he can't come along, you need a guy to be able to step in. I mean, it's really three spots, and it's three – I think different positions. Let's run through here in the final 2-3 minutes. Let's run through the scenarios here quickly. Obviously, the Warriors Grizzlies Sunday 12:30. We're gonna have Warriors live for you at 11. Keep it locked right here on 95.7 The Game. We got you covered all day long. Dubs and Grizzlies. If the Warriors win, they're the 8 seed, which means they would take on the 7 in the play-in tournament. Play-in tournament for the Western Conference is Wednesday. The 10-9 game and the 7-8 game are both going to be Wednesday. The winner of the 7-8 game is in as the 7 seed. Obviously, the loser of that game will then go on to play the winner of the 9-10 game. That game is a week from tonight, should it need to be played from the Warriors' point of view. The Eastern Conference will be Tuesday and Thursday. As far as moving your way up, the 6 and the 7, Covey, it's down to Portland and the Lakers. Portland controls the 6. If they win versus Denver, on Sunday, then that's it. The Lakers would be seventh regardless. The Lakers need two wins plus the Portland loss at home to Denver. Now, Portland can also move up to fifth if they win and Dallas loses on Sunday. Dallas is at Minnesota. So 5, 6, and 7 are all in play for Portland. The Lakers can only be 6 or 7, but they need help to be 6.
There you go. I mean, that's it. And for the Warriors, you know, obviously still a lot to be decided in the West. But for the Dubs, it's handle your business against the Grizzlies, and then you got two cracks at getting through the play-in tournament, whether it's Portland or L.A. on Wednesday. And if that doesn't go your way, then, you know, hopefully at that point you're playing, you know, the winner of Memphis-San Antonio, and you still got a chance to get to the postseason. Either way, this is great. I just love that so much is still going to be decided here in the last two games of the regular season. And I love the fact that we're going to be ripping and running, what, 11 a.m. on Sunday, J.D.? We're going to be getting ready for Dubs Grizz?
Yeah, 11 a.m. And we've reached the point of the schedule here, and I'll run through a couple other quick scenarios. We've reached the point where I don't know where my next day off is. I don't know when my next day off is, Covey. Like, I don't know. Like, we've reached that point. I miss that from, like, these playoff runs of the past where I don't know. Like, because we're going to be doing the final word, and I'm on with Friedel tomorrow morning at, you know, 9 to noon, and we're going to be back at 11. We're going to have final word on Monday, and all of the nights where there aren't games, we're going to have final word. It sounds like the Warriors, if they're in a series, they're going to be playing next Sunday, which means it would just keep going. So we're working our way through this thing. I don't know when it's going to be, but I love it, and it's a lot of fun, and we're going to have a lot of fun, and I'm excited for it here on 95.7 The Game as the Warriors try and take this thing as far as they can. Just wrapping up quickly with the top half of the bracket, the Jazz control the one seed now. All they need is a win in Sacramento on Sunday, or if the Suns lose to the Spurs in either of the next two games, then the Jazz are the one seed. So that's looking like the way it's going to go. Suns need to win two against the Spurs and have the Jazz lose to the Kings for that to flip. So it looks like the Jazz are going to be one. And we mentioned the Nuggets now control the three seed, but they're in Portland. The Clippers need a win at OKC and Denver to lose in Portland, which could happen. If that happens, Clippers and Nuggets would flip-flop. And the Clippers would become three. The Nuggets would still be four. So good stuff, my man. Any questions? I think I laid all that out. Any questions?
No, I'm going to go check my Venn diagram when we're done here and make sure I'm going to check my notes and make sure that I got all that. We're locked in on the Dubs, and mark my words, Clippers aren't even making it to the conference finals. Outside of that, I don't know what the hell is going to happen.
All right, so lock in. Enjoy the day off tomorrow, 11 o'clock, Sunday morning. Breakfast with JD and Covey and Warriors Live and the Warriors and the Grizzlies and Warriors Wrap-Up. We just got you covered all day on Sunday. Looking forward to it, brother.
You too, man. Bloody Marys, mimosas, Eggs Benedict, and final regular season game of the year. Let's do it. Good stuff, JD. I'll be listening to you and Nick tomorrow, man.
All of the above. For Ryan Covey, I'm John Dickinson. Thanks to Sterling. Thanks to Bobby Spang. Thanks to everybody back at our studios. We're back at 11 on Sunday. Join me with Friedel tomorrow at 9 a.m. And keep it locked. We're your home for Warriors basketball. It's 95.7 The Game.